We're in a series called The Next Big Thing, which is about kids. It's all over the Bible. God cares about kids. And we've really taken a stand at a church that we really care about kids. And it's not everyone's personal calling and passion to work directly with children, but God cares so much about kids that if you want to be like God, if you want to be godly, then you have to care about kids. So we're taking a few weeks to just focus on that. 2 weeks ago, we introduced this idea, and we looked at what the Bible teaches about the two most important sets of adults in kids' lives, their parents and their church, which are ironically maybe the two most underestimated and undervalued forces in the lives of kids today and all the public conversation about what kids need. And, you know, the public will sort of beat up on parents' role with church and ignore the church's role with church, but the Bible is incredibly affirming and encouraging about how important it is that the kids' parents and church are deeply involved in their life. So in our home groups, we're looking at stories from the Bible about the role of church and parents in kids' lives. Today, the focus is on parents, and the name of this message is Parental Guidance Required. 2 weeks, we're going to focus on the church, and Matt Mueller is going to make his speaking debut with Everyday Church, and I'm really excited about what he has to say about our role together in our kids' lives. Today, though, we're focusing on the guidance that children need from parents, and also from godparents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, coaches, teachers, I mean, really any child that you have in your life. We're going to hear a very important principle from the Bible today that will, for me, when I heard it, change the way that I view children especially, but also just all of my relationships. So I'm really excited for you to hear what Larry and Wendy Bennett are going to share today out of the scripture. So I want to introduce to you Larry and Wendy Bennett, if you guys could come up. Larry is the executive pastor of Everyday Church. Wendy Bennett is the family life minister for Everyday Church. And I'm really excited for you guys to hear from them. One, because it's just overdue. They both have, I'm going to talk them up for just a second because they're going to be all self-deprecating and humble and beat up on themselves. So just let me just talk them up for a minute. They both have very deep spiritual lives. They think deeply about scripture. And if you know them at all, you know that they love you deeply. And they love God deeply. And they love what he's up to in the world deeply. So I feel like for me, that's the platform you need to speak into my life. And you don't really need anything else. If I know that you love me deeply and love God deeply, you can say whatever you want to me. But they're also kind of awesome parents. Now, I know everybody in this room is thinking, I'd really like to hear what Chris, who doesn't have any kids, has to say about parenting. I know, but we decided it would probably be a better job to have actual parents give this message. So we asked Larry and Wendy to give this message. And Lindsay and I don't have kids yet. If God blesses us at some point, and we do, if my kids turn out half as good as Larry and Wendy's kids, I'll be really excited. And I know, you know, kids are their own people. They make their own choices, and we only have a role to play in their life. But parents have a really important role to play, and Larry and Wendy have something really helpful to share.
Thank you, Chris. It's kind of fun to be up here because I get to see you all at once instead of meeting you one at a time at the doors. Thanks a lot, Chris. I appreciate it. He spent a good bit of time over the last couple of weeks talking about Wendy and I and saying nice things about us as parents, so we're going to try to set the record straight and let you know the real scoop of the craziness that's going on in our lives and the challenge that it is to have three daughters and all that stuff. So we'll get into all sorts of things. I had this sort of experience as we were going through this. We spent a lot of time the last couple of weeks just thinking about being mom and dad and our role as parents and our relationship with one another and all this stuff. And it brought to mind, one, I spent a lot of time just thinking about my own childhood, and it brought to mind this experience. And I imagine that you've shared this, where you've had an experience where you think something is completely normal, and you just kind of proceed through life, and this is just how it is. And then you, like, mention it to somebody, and they're like, that's not normal. Well, that is the story of my life, really. Wendy and I have been together a really long time, like 18 or 19 years now. And when we first started dating, I would, you know, like, say things from my childhood that I thought were just normal things. And she would, like, sometimes just laugh in my face. And then other times she would have this sort of shocked look. And other times she would, like, weep because she's like, you don't realize it. That's terrible. That's not normal. That's terrible. And so I have become to realize over the last number of years with Wendy's help that that I had a crazy childhood. And so I'm going to share just a few things with you initially. I had this long, like pages of craziness. I trimmed it down to just a few things. So so I was born, born into a family of 8 of us. I was the youngest of 6 children. I have 4 older sisters and an older brother. And I was counting. That's a cute picture. So I lost my place. So I was counting back through like my childhood, these different sort of changes that took place. I lived in 12 different houses in the course of my childhood in 4 different states. I attended 8 different schools from kindergarten to 12th grade through high school. So a whole lot of transition. My dad, I was trying to think back through, and I can remember 10 different jobs that he had through the course of my upbringing before I left home. So there was a whole lot of transition and change and movement happening in my childhood. That has an effect on you as a kid. I mentioned 4 sisters and an older brother. And I was thinking through in different conversations I've had, I know at least 3 of my siblings came out of childhood thinking maybe mom and dad didn't love them. So there was this emotional sort of thing, negative thing that was happening in my family. The discipline was very harsh, very physical and very harsh. There was a lot of fighting, a lot of conflict, and things that really weren't healthy. So that's the sort of emotional side of it. We were poor, we didn't have a whole lot of money, and so that created a whole struggle. Health issues oftentimes go along with emotional issues. My dad was sick a lot, a couple of times he almost died. My mother started getting sick when I was a teenager and died a number of years later. I spent a lot of time in the hospital with injuries and whatever. So I just want to let you know, I had a crazy childhood. So coming into parenting, I did not exactly have a lot of great tools to go back to. I didn't have a great example to look back on and say, oh, wow, okay, I'll just do it the way my parents did, because they did some wonderful things and I love them dearly, but there was a lot of junk. And Courtney, I appreciate you giving me a look about this nice bag that I'm carrying with me. You might have noticed it. It is a really cool bag of my daughter's I decided to wear. But I'm not just wearing it because I like to wear yellow bags around. This actually is sort of symbolic, so we're going to set this up here. I don't know if you've ever thought of the concept. You probably have. You may have wrestled with a little bit of your baggage, but we all have it. We all have this bag, and yours may look a lot cooler than this or a lot less cool than this, but we all have this bag. Figuratively, we have a bag, and that bag is full of all sorts of craziness. I'm not going to show you what's in here because you might not like me anymore, but my bag is full of crazy emotional junk that I brought with me from that childhood, from the things that were done to me, for the things that I did, the mistakes that I've made through the course of my life, and we sort of collect these things that we carry through life, and a lot of them we bring from our childhood, and we carry them into our relationships, and we carry them, if you become a parent, you bring it in big time into your relationship with your spouse, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your kids' lives. We're constantly bringing this stuff in, and for a lot of us, we don't take the time to think back and figure out what's in the bag and what effect is it having. So we're going to leave this up here, and we're going to allude to baggage now and then. And so if you haven't thought about that, then I encourage you to start thinking about it, because you do have baggage. No matter how cool and how attractive and how awesome your life is, you have baggage, and it affects things. So we will talk about baggage off and on. But just to give you a little bit of my becoming a father experience, since we're talking about parenting today, Emma, our oldest daughter, is almost 13. Which is insane. And I remember when she was born, she was beautiful. It was an amazing day. She was tiny. I remember when they handed her to me after they bundled her up, and I was just like, she's so small. And she had dark, like really dark curly hair, which really made me happy. She was just this sweet, cute, smiley little girl. And we took her into our life. And it was crazy, and it was amazing, and it was wonderful, and all of these things mixed together. Wendy did most of the work, honestly, the first year or two. I didn't know what I was doing, so she did most of it. So then Emma is about 2 years old, not quite 2, and we find out that Lily is coming along. And right before Emma was 2, Lily was born. And Lily was really fair-skinned and really, really light blonde hair, and she was even smaller than Emma was and just tiny and amazing. And then we went home from the hospital. And I realized we have an infant, and Wendy's exhausted from taking care of this little girl, and we have an almost 2-year-old. And I was trying to figure out what humans do with almost two-year-olds. I was chatting with Demi earlier about her little brother. Two-year-olds are crazy. They never stop moving. Maybe she was saying that David doesn't talk a lot. Emma, from the time she was about 11 months old, hasn't stopped talking, actually. She chit-chats and asks all kinds of questions, and she was running and getting into everything, and it was crazy. And I realized, like, I have no clue. What have I gotten into? I don't know what this is all about or what I'm supposed to do as a dad. And so I'm like looking around for examples, and I reflect back to my childhood and think about what was there and find a few good things to carry forward, but a lot of unhealthy stuff. And so I start looking at my friends, and I realize like they all have issues and don't know what they're doing. And so I think, you know what? God gave us the Bible. The Bible's going to have some great examples of parents. But I don't know if you've spent much time looking at parents in the Bible. Chris made a comment some time ago. Adam and Eve, the first parents, their son invented murder. So something wasn't quite right about his childhood or whatever was going on. You've got, who else do we have? We have Abraham, who was the father of nations. You read his story, he abandoned his first son, Ishmael. And Abraham's nephew, Lot, you don't even want to know. It's kind of just terrible stuff happened with Lot and his daughters. He had daughters, and it was just awful. So you go through and look at the examples of parents in the Bible, and it's just kind of crazy. And then you're like, okay, Jesus was a great guy, so he probably had great parents. And so you skip forward. There's not a lot about Jesus' parents in the Bible, like parenting stuff. There's one really big story. He's 12 years old. It's like the only one mentioned from the time he's little into the time he's 30. They mention 12-year-old experience. They lose him in the city. They leave the city, and it takes them days to figure out where their son is. So I don't know what that means, but God kept that story for us. So I'm not so sure that you're going to find great examples. I realize I couldn't find great examples of human parents in the Bible. So I'm kind of lost. I don't know what to do. I have kids, and I'm kind of hopeless. And this is what I do.
Thank you. I'm sure that a lot of you, if your parents can relate to this, I've talked to many parents over the years and realized that we all kind of hit this wall and realize we don't know what we're doing. And if you don't have kids yet, my guess is that you can look back to your childhood and see some baggage as well, and maybe look at some parenting that wasn't ideal. I'm pretty sure that you watch other parents and with their kids, maybe on the subway, and think, what in the world are they doing? I would never do that. And I know you do that because I did it too before I had kids. But I know that you might not have a better idea, a better plan for how to parent. And so the good news is for all of us is that we do have a perfect example of a parent. In the Bible, God is our Heavenly Father. And so when we hit this wall that we talked about, it was really important for us and very empowering to kind of reread scripture and look at it from the perspective of God as our Father and see if there was a principle or a theme to how he parented his children through the Bible and even today. And the good news is there is a principle that we want to talk to you today about. And a great place to see this is in the story of when God needed to replace King Saul. He needed to replace him and find a new king. Now, a little background. God's children at the time, the Israelites, they wanted a king. And so God kind of relented. He knew kings weren't perfect, but he kind of said, okay, I'll give you a king. He gave them King Saul. And King Saul started out as a man who wanted to follow after God, but like many men who have infinite amount of power, he was eventually corrupted. And so God decided he needed to replace him. And so he sent his prophet to find a replacement. And a couple weeks ago, Chris talked about Hannah, the story of Hannah, and how she took her son Samuel to the temple and kind of gave him to be raised to serve the Lord. And Samuel eventually grew up to be an adult, and he was God's chosen prophet. And in the story, he tells Samuel that he wants him to go to a town called Bethlehem, and there's a man named Jesse that has many sons, and one of those sons will be the new king. So Samuel goes to Bethlehem. He meets Jesse. He invites him and his sons to come with him and to offer a sacrifice together to the Lord. And we pick up this story in 1 Samuel chapter 16. Samuel says, "When they arrived, Samuel saw Eliab, one of Jesse's sons, and thought, 'Surely the Lord's chosen stands here before the Lord.' But the Lord said to Samuel, 'Do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things people look at. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart.'" And after this, the next son kind of stands up, and Samuel says, "No, not him either." And then the next one, "No, you weren't the one." And he goes through all seven of his sons. And finally, Samuel says, "Do you have any more sons?" And he said, "Oh, yeah, my youngest son actually is in the fields with tending the sheep." He's like, "Go get him." And he brings him in. Of course, that's David. And God says to Samuel to rise and anoint him. He is the one. So what is the principle we learn from the story? Well, the same way that God chose a king is the same way he parents us today. The principle we learn is that God focuses on the heart.
I think of the things that we've learned through the course of parenting and figuring it all out along the way, this is really the biggest principle, that God focuses on the heart, and the sort of question of how does that apply and how do we see that play out in our own lives and the lives of our kids and all of this stuff. And the cool thing is that we see Jesus doing the same thing. And so I'm going to walk through a couple of stories you may be familiar with, but two different stories. One, the first one, we actually looked at this some time ago. Jesus meets this woman. She's a Samaritan woman, which basically meant he shouldn't be interacting with her. And she's a woman, and men and women didn't interact in this way. But Jesus meets this woman at a well, and they have a very, what seems to be quiet, very interesting sort of conversation between the two of them, between Jesus and this woman. And at some point in the conversation, Jesus sort of brings up the fact that he knows that she has had five husbands, and that she's currently on man number six, and that he's not yet her husband. And he just kind of points this out, like, "Yes, I do know, actually, that you've had five husbands before this man, and this guy's not your husband either." And he just kind of brings it up. He doesn't rebuke her. We don't see him, like, rebuke her. We don't see him say really anything critical or negative about what was going on. And you look through the course of the story, and you try to figure out, like, how Jesus responded to this, and I think this principle is what we see at work, that Jesus saw this woman, and he started to interact with her, and he realized her heart issue wasn't that she had five husbands. Her heart issue wasn't that she was on guy number six. The issue was something far deeper than that. And so he uses this concept that God and Jesus focus on the heart, and he begins to look down inside of her. And it doesn't tell us exactly what her heart issue is, but I think we get a little bit of an idea. That we see this woman, who I think her heart issue was just an emptiness in her heart. She had a hole. She had this emptiness down inside of her, and she was trying to fill it up with relationships. She kept getting into relationship after relationship after relationship and thinking maybe that would solve her problem. But Jesus says, the relationship with men is never going to fill the emptiness in your heart. The only way to do that is for me. I, Jesus, am the only one that can fill the void inside of you. And it's just amazing to me that you, like, if you interacted with this lady or met her and you knew her life story, what would you say to her? I mean, would you bring up, like, you know what, this is not healthy. This isn't healthy behavior, the cycle of relationships. But Jesus doesn't seem to do that. He doesn't focus on the behavior. He looks past the behavior. And I think that's the key on this, that God isn't ultimately concerned with our appearance, the way we look, and he's not ultimately concerned with our behavior. He's ultimately concerned with and focuses on what's going on in our hearts. There's another story that you may be familiar with, but with this guy named Zacchaeus, this really short guy. Apparently he was really short because he couldn't see over other people, and so at some point he hides up in this tree, and I'll talk about that in a second. But this guy, he mentions later on in the story that he had stolen from people and cheated people. He was a tax collector, which we know that many tax collectors were very dishonest, abusive towards people, taking advantage. And so you got this guy who's probably hated by a lot of people. He's looked down, certainly looked down on by the religious people. And he's short, too. So he climbs up on a tree one day because he wants to see Jesus. And Jesus walks by, walks up to the tree, looks up and says, Zacchaeus, come on down, I'm gonna have dinner with you. And you follow this story through, never does Jesus say, you're a criminal. You're stealing from people and you've got to change that. Jesus doesn't ever call him out for his bad behavior. He just calls him down and says, hey, I'm gonna spend time with you. And I think he's looking into this guy and I wonder what he sees in his heart. I wonder what Jesus saw when he looked at Zacchaeus, what he saw down in his heart. Because his response to Zacchaeus isn't what we would probably respond to the behavior. His response is to something much deeper. And his response is, I'm gonna spend time with you. You need my time, you need my attention, you need focus from me. The cool thing is, that's exactly what Jesus does. This man, Zacchaeus, stands up and says, I have cheated a lot of people and I'm gonna pay them back even more than I took from them and I'm gonna give half of my wealth to the poor. So by focusing on the heart issue, the real need inside of this person, the bad behavior like disappears. It's amazing. It's an amazing thing. You focus on the heart issue, and oftentimes the thing that we think, the symptomatic sort of things, often disappear because we've dealt with what's going on in the heart. God focuses on the heart, and it's a cool thing when you start to see this play out in the lives of kids. There's a whole lot of examples in Jesus' life, and I hope that you'll kind of keep this principle that God focuses on the heart in your mind as you're reading through Scripture, because I think when you're reading the Bible, you'll start to see how this plays out. You'll hear stories about things that Jesus did, or you'll read something, and you'll start to see this concept that God focuses on the heart, that Jesus was attending to what was going on inside of people, and he wasn't fixated on behavior, which is oftentimes what parenting ends up being like. So we see, you know, Jesus doing this. Unfortunately, I am not like Jesus. I do not see very well. I don't see very clearly into my own heart, and I spend a lot of time with my daughters, and I still struggle to see what's going on in their heart. And so we have been wrestling, Wendy and I, over the years with this, and we actually ended up turning this phrase, God focuses on the heart, into a question that we can start using. And it's basically this, is this a heart issue? So we start to ask the question, is this a heart issue? When I see junk coming out of me, then I slow down, I look at myself and think, is there a heart issue in this? And is there something going on in my heart that's generating this kind of behavior? When I see my girls doing this or that, I try to, you know, your response is to deal with things, but we started to slow down a little bit and say, is this a heart issue in Emma? Is this a heart issue in Clara or in Lily? And it's helped us slow down and really look at what's core in them as opposed to sort of fixating on behavior, that sort of thing. So
ideally, we're supposed to be focused on our child's heart, but what I found out early on in parenting was that instead of that being my motivation, my child's heart, instead, my baggage was showing up and was motivating me. And it wasn't even my baggage, it was kind of my mom's baggage that kind of trickled down into mine. My mother was abandoned by her mother when she was a toddler, and she never came back in the 1950s when that just didn't happen. And she was raised by her father. And I'm always amazed at what a good job she did as a mom because she didn't have any example. But I also know that as a child, she was always concerned about what other people were thinking about her. Her clothes, her hair, her shoes, her lunch probably all looked different and let people know that her family wasn't like theirs. And so she kind of took that into parenting. So when I was little, how we looked really mattered. We all needed to be clean and neat and no stains, no holes. I mean, it was a big deal if that happened. And that kind of came into my parenting. When I first had kids, it was really, really important that they all looked clean and neat. And I really cared that other people thought I was a good mom. And I thought that's what a good mom was. A good mom gets her kids all clean and neat and shows up to church and they all kind of follow behind. And that is what I spent my energy on. And the problem is you have limited energy. If you're a parent, you know you have limited energy to spend on parenting. And I was spending my energy to make sure other people thought I was a good mom instead of focusing on their heart. And I realized when they were pretty young, I needed to make a change. And so for me, that has meant that my daughters wear socks that don't match often. It means that they pick out their clothes and they don't always match. It means they pick out their hairstyles, and a lot of times they do their hair, and I'm like, and it is a struggle every day for me because I just want to control it. But it isn't a heart issue, and I have to remind myself of that. I'll give you one more example of this. Teen years, you guys might remember this. There's a lot of arguments about appearances. She wants to dye her hair black. She wants to get her nose pierced, maybe get a tattoo. And I know that out of three kids, this is going to come up. And it could be that whoever wants to get their hair done a certain way, that they want to be rebellious, or they want to make me mad or hurt me. Or it could be that they want the approval of their peers. It could be a heart issue, but it doesn't have to be. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a heart issue. And so it's really important that when this comes up, that I know where my child's heart is and know why. Maybe they just want to change their hair color. And I need to make sure that when I say yes or no, I'm saying because of their heart and not because of what other people are going to think of me as a mom whose daughter has pink hair. So I need to remember, is this a heart issue?
So common heart issues. Wendy and I spent some time thinking about just ourselves and things that come out of us, and thinking about the girls, and kind of made a list of some common heart issues. You could make a list like this. I'm sure you could spend time kind of going down through and making a list of things that you see sort of in your kids' hearts or in your own heart or the people around you, or just come up with a list. But I'll share a few with you that we've encountered at different points and often struggle to figure out what to do about them. So the whole respect thing, it comes in a lot of different forms, but a disrespect for other people can very much be a heart issue. It can be something going on way down in their heart. And so looking at when you see like respect and disrespect coming out in different ways, looking at that, not caring about other people. So just like, whatever, I don't care. My sister's like on the floor bawling. It was my fault. I don't care. You know, that kind of just disregard for other people, or not being caring about other people. Then being unkind. So actually doing things that are unkind to other people, that very much can be a hard issue. Not being honest with yourself. Not being honest with other people, that can be, the dishonesty can be rooted in your heart. Greed and selfishness, obviously that's stuff that can flow out of a heart that's got some greed and selfishness issues. Withholding forgiveness, it's something that we all struggle with in relationships where people hurt us or whatever, but a lack of forgiveness or not having a forgiving spirit, very much so. Knowing your own worth and value. This is a really big one, particularly for kids, but I think we all deal with this. Like, where does my worth come from? What makes me worth anything to the world, to God, to you guys? Where does my worth come from? And if that's messed up, if I have a bad sense of where value and worth comes from, it can lead into all sorts of different destructive behaviors. So worth and value and knowing, not letting other people push you around or abuse you, knowing your value is critical. One that I've come to realize, I'm actually more and more, I've been challenged on a few occasions recently on this, but fear. I don't think of myself as a fearful person, but I have some real fears. When I think about my role as a father, my role as a husband, I have some very real fears related to what the way that I live and what could happen and trusting God and all of that stuff. So fear can be a very real heart issue, and it can be incredibly damaging, particularly for children. It can raise them into people that just don't make good decisions because they're constantly acting out of fear. So there's lots of different ways that this plays out, and you could add to that list. I'm sure we could come up with a bazillion different things to put on the heart issue list. Lists like that aren't often super helpful for me because I want to know, like, well, what does that mean or how does that play out? And so I'm going to give you an example from our girls. Wendy's going to share an example also. But the story of Zacchaeus actually is an interesting one, and as I was wrestling through this, I made some comparisons that I think are very, they were very helpful for me in relationship to my daughter, Lily. So connecting Zacchaeus and Lily may sound awful because Zacchaeus like robbed and stole and mistreated people, and Lily's 11, you know, she doesn't do that kind of stuff. But Lily does get angry, and Lily does get very unkind. She gets angry, she gets upset about things, and she can hurt her sisters or act out against Wendy and I and do things that are very, very unkind. And for a long time, I didn't know how to deal with it. And so I would just like react to the behavior, like, you can't do that. And we try to find ways to deal with the very negative behaviors that we were seeing in her, and it wasn't working. It just, in fact, she was angry and unkind to her sisters, and so I would get angry and be unkind to her as sort of a punishment, but that really wasn't helping the issue. I felt a little bit hypocritical, like, you're getting in trouble for what I'm mad at you. So I just was really struggling with this, and so we started to ask this question, like, is this a heart issue? Is something going on down inside of Lily that we need to be aware of? And I realized through the course of thinking about it and spending time with her and praying about this that her heart issue wasn't unkindness and it wasn't anger or meanness. Her heart issue was a need to know she was worth something, and particularly to me as her dad. She needed to know that I loved her and that I would set everything else aside and spend time with her and focus on her. And that's the connection between Zacchaeus and Lily that is interesting to me, that Jesus' response to Zacchaeus wasn't behavior. It was, you need my attention. You need me to focus on you. And I know if I pay attention to you and I have a meal with you and I spend time, that the bad stuff will take care of itself. I realized with Lily that was exactly the case. And so she and I, periodically, we started this a number of years ago. We have breakfast now and then, and it's usually, unfortunately, I'm not proactive. I don't have this scheduled regularly, but it's usually I start to see the anger and the unkindness with Lily. And so I'll ask her, I'll wait till things cool down a little bit, and I'll ask her, hey, do you want to go out for breakfast tomorrow before school? And she's always like, yeah. So we go to like McDonald's or whatever, it doesn't even matter to her. And she gets pancakes and sausage usually. And sometimes we'll sit there for 20 minutes or 30 minutes, and sometimes we'll talk, and sometimes we won't talk at all. She isn't in the mood to talk. She just kind of sits and smiles, and she just, as the like 20 minutes passes, she gets smilier and happier and glows more and more. And we leave and drop her off at school, and those behaviors, the unkindness and the anger, like disappears for weeks, sometimes months. It blows my mind. When I realized it, I was like, well, that was easy. Like 20 minutes and I don't really have to make conversation. We just spend time together and talk about life or not or whatever. And she feels better. But it was this identity. It's this, like, she needs to know that she's important to me, that I love her, and that I would set everything else aside and just focus on her for 20 minutes even. And it does something inside of her heart for this heart issue for her. So just a simple example, a very real one where this has helped me immensely, because there was a lot of fear for me when I started to see this stuff creeping up in Lily. I didn't know what to do. And it was behavior that I was afraid of, really, that she was inheriting something from my family and from me that was going to affect her for the rest of her life. And so we started talking about that, and she knows she needs away time, she needs to ask when she needs time with somebody if she feels like she hasn't gotten good one-on-one time. So, all right.
Last example is, Larry talked a little bit about his family, and I can say with complete honesty, there are some great things about his family. And one of those things is there is this personality trait that a lot of them have, where they are just natural leaders. They have incredible strength, and just they're sure of themselves, they're charming, they can go and talk to anybody, and it's very different than me and my family. We're very timid people, and so it's funny because I've seen it in my own children, especially my youngest daughter, Clara. I see you know Clara. She has a lot of strength. She is very sure of herself, and I really admire that about her. But with that personality, sometimes there are some negative traits that can go along with that. And some of them are a person would ignore other people's opinions or not be as sensitive to other people's feelings. Not learning from the mistakes you make, like admitting I made a mistake and learning from that mistake, a pride, those are all heart issues that go along with that personality trait. And it would be really easy for me to say, oh, that's just Claire's personality. It's different than mine. It's her personality. And ignore the heart issue. My guess is you all can kind of think of a person that you have to interact with as an adult who kind of has those characteristics and never really worked on that heart issue. And they're difficult. They're difficult to work with. They're difficult to live with. And I love Clara too much, I believe in her potential too much, to let her go into her adulthood without working on that heart issue. And I'll be honest, it is going to be rough. It's going to be hard and challenging, and I'm going to want to give up because she's very strong. And it's going to take talking and discipline and years of work to help her with this heart issue. But it's necessary, because if she doesn't get it, it's going to affect the rest of her life. Every time she has a future relationship, it will show up. And I don't want that for her. So it's going to be work, and you're going to need to pray for me. As we're wrapping up, I just want to reiterate that Larry and I aren't perfect. We aren't claiming to be perfect parents in any way. We make a lot of mistakes. Chris said that we make tons of mistakes, and that's true. We do make tons of mistakes every day. It's really hard work to remember to look at your own heart and to look at your child's heart and not just react. But my hope is all that hard work will pay off, that when my children leave my home someday, that the bag they take with them will be baggage that actually helps them and helps them to be better people and people that look more like Jesus. That's our goal.
Thanks, guys. Would you guys just give them a round of applause? I feel like that was helpful. They actually wrote this conclusion that I'm about to share, but they were nervous. Larry was nervous that he would get a little too emotional and wouldn't be able to say it, because he started to kind of well up when he was saying it, because it's a truly inspiring vision of what could happen for our kids if our parents sort of focus on their hearts, and if we support parents and value them and hold them up and help them focus on kids' hearts. I'm going to take 1 minute to try to enter into this concept, and let me tell it this way. I am a pastor-type person, and I have been for many years, so I do weddings and funerals and all that kind of stuff. And one of the things that I've done a lot is go to the hospital when people have babies. And so I've held many, many, many babies. And I will say this, 9 out of 10 babies are absolutely adorable. 10 out of 10 babies are absolutely adorable to their mom and dad. But there'd be that 1 out of 10 babies that I'd go in and you try to be friendly and honest, you know, at all times, and you're like, yeah, whoa, hey. That's a baby right there. Look at that baby. That's a baby. But of course, they see this incredibly beautiful, handsome child. And then if you've been around parents, their kids are geniuses. They all learn to talk when they're 3 months old. And, you know, they're just, they know how to, you know, whatever. They're learning sign language or what, you know, like they're in tune with their parents. And it's easy for us to look in from the outside and say, man, parents have, I mean, obviously they have rose-tinted glasses on. They have a very distorted view of how awesome their kids are. But I don't think that they do. I think the rest of us are completely wrong. I think that parents see their kids exactly as God sees their kids. I think those children are the center of the Holy Spirit's attention every moment of every day, their whole life, because God's that vast, and God sees their eternal potential, and I think the rest of us are wrong. And so I think we have a lot to learn about how parents view their children, and I think that's how we're supposed to view all children, the way that God views all children. And the person sitting to your left and your right, by the way, and yourself, this is how God views us. But the rest of the world and us, we're distorted, and so not everyone's going to see your kids that way, and this life is going to be rough on them. They're going to go through some rough stuff. And it's part of why Larry and Wendy wanted me to share a little bit from Hebrews chapter 11, which is not a great chapter to read if you're really thinking about parenting, because it's the faith chapter, and I'll let you read it on your own, but it kind of talks about all these incredible men and women of God and how God used them and all the amazing things they did in life, and then it gets real dark, and it starts talking about how these followers of Jesus they walked around destitute, wearing rags, and they didn't eat, and they were hated by the world, and then they were martyred and sawn in half, and you're like reading through this chapter like, I don't want to be a great man of faith. It gets really, really, really dark. But then it comes to this incredible magical phrase at the end of this passage that I'm going to put up. This is verse 38. The world was not worthy of them. And I don't know if you've ever been to a funeral where there's just someone that just led a glorious life, and there's just that vibe in the air where everyone's like, you know, God just took them home. They were just like a little too good for the world. They were a little too good for the world. And this is God himself saying of these people, the whole world, it just wasn't worthy of them. They had to take them to heaven. And Larry and Wendy just wanted me to sort of lay that out as a vision for what our kids could be like. If we focused on their hearts and not all the junk that culture wants us to focus on, we could actually participate in raising up men and women for whom God himself would say, the world is not worthy of them.